This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Good morning, good morning. We are live here. Good afternoon. You happen to be back east. You are here live with Dr. Jeff Werber, your host for the next 30 minutes here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff. We're also here live on Instagram, and I'm waving to those Instagram followers that are joining us here on the show. Thank you so much. So, as Mr. Rogers said, it's a beautiful day in this neighborhood. I got to tell you, it's gorgeous today, and I'm sure I'm getting a smile from Mark, so I'm assuming back in Florida, it's beautiful too. Yep. So, our producer, Mark, is in Fort Lauderdale, and anyway, yep, it's gorgeous there too. Hey, Bethany, how are you? And anyway, so you know the drill. You hear it. We're talking about anything you want to talk about. If you have questions, let me have them. I'm always equipped to answer your questions. I had a couple things I wanted to talk about today too, but I'm sure that's no surprise because I'm never at a loss of things to say. So, but I'd like to sort of hear what you have questions about. And up here is in North Nashville. It's gorgeous too. Love it. Okay, let's talk itching dogs. I have two dogs that are nonstop itching and licking. It's driving me nuts. That's Vicky over at Eloise. So how you doing, Vicky? First of all, this time of year, in most places, we see a lot of scratching and itching dogs. Why? It's allergy season. And this can be many things. We have allergies that are due to fleas. We call FAD, flea allergic dermatitis. We have allergies due to atopic dermatitis. Those are inhaled allergens. And those are things from, you know, pollens, grasses, weeds, trees, you name it. And these dogs can scratch. It's almost like it would be the equivalent of our hay fever. So when we are allergic to those pollens, we usually have respiratory signs. But when dogs have it, they scratch. And what's interesting, the mechanisms are very similar. But interestingly, when it comes to allergies in dogs, histamine, which is a mediator of our inflammatory or allergic response, has very little to no role in the dog. So when you're jumping for the Zyrtec or the Claritin, don't waste your time. It's not going to work. And often we see secondary infection because of the intense scratching, because when the skin gets inflamed, it loses its ability to keep away the bacteria. And the very same bacteria that may have peacefully coexisted on the skin, they become an opportunist and they start causing the dog to scratch as well. So there's so many things involved. Now, also, we have to always think about that there are other allergies that can cause itching. For example, food allergy. Now, food allergy usually manifests with scratching and licking at the feet, also the ears, and maybe rubbing at the face. Not much on the trunk, though. Again, as I often joke, the dog didn't read the book, so they don't know how they're supposed to be. And I've had animals come in with classic signs of, say, seasonal allergies, which are the fleas, the pollen, et cetera, and yet they're scratching all year long, and it turns out to be food. So when the scratching is seasonal, better to think of things that are seasonal. For example, the pollens, the weeds, the grasses, trees, spring and summer. Fleas in some parts of the country, I know back in Florida, for example, they're year-round. So it might be hard to tell whether or not it's a flea because seasonal or not. But when it's non-seasonal allergies, meaning it's all the time, then you're going to think of food, something they do all the time, or something around the house. You know, kapok, wool, feathers, human epithelia. That's right. There are some dogs that are allergic to us, just like we could be allergic to them. So again, that's why when you're sitting and talking to your veterinarian or you get a referral to a veterinary dermatologist, one of the most important things in helping of the diagnosis is a thorough, thorough history. And as a matter of fact, a lot of times I know the dermatologist that we refer to, they'll book that first appointment for an hour because they know the detailed history is one of the more important things. So that's important. Now, can you wash them every week? Eloise asked, yes, you can. You want to get the right soap. If there's secondary infection, you need to use something that's antibacterial. Soothing, there are many great shampoos. I have one, something called Aloe Oat. I have something called, for example, For Real, which is chlorhexidine and ketoconazole. But also just know this, when you are bathing a dog with a special shampoo given recommended by your veterinarian or wherever you get it, don't lather them up, wait a minute and rinse them off. It's not like us washing our hair because you need to let that stuff work. These are medicated. They have ingredients that are meant to be used for a purpose. So you want to make sure that they sit for at least 15, 20 minutes. I swallowed a bug. What itch? Yeah, what itch is good. What itch has promoxine, has an antihistamine in it. And that too, it's got to sit to work So it's a great shampoo. So that'll help as well. Hold on. There was another question that came in. Best way to clean Amstaff's ears. Liquid ear cleaners are good. I usually use just cotton wool soaked. I did human bathing. No. You want to get a good ear flush. You want to get something that is made for ears to cut through the wax. I have my product. It's called Hear You Now. Trust me, there are many really good ear products on the market. Speak to your veterinarian. If you need something, let me know. We can get you out of Hear You Now. But you got to let it sit and you want to massage your ear. The biggest mistake people make when it comes to ears is, it sounds trite, how and where to massage the ear. It's so funny when I have someone with me and I show them the correct way to do it, they go, oh, I didn't know that. So most people will take the ear and just take the skin, right? You know, along with the rough below the opening, which is the vertical canal, and just massage the skin. That's not going to do it. It's not going to work. You really need to get behind the canal. You need to take your thumb and you need to stick it behind the ear, and you're going to feel a tube, a firm cartilaginous tube. That's the vertical canal. Once you've identified that, then you take your index finger and go around all the way to the other end until you have it in your hand. There is no questioning what you have in your hand because it's the only hard tubular structure in that area. That's what you want to massage. Don't just take the hair and the skin. That's not going to do it. You really need to get the entire canal massaged thoroughly for a minute or two. And that will loosen up all the wax and the debris, and that will shoot to the top. Then you can take your cotton swab. I'm not a fan of starting with the cotton swab in your finger because all you're doing there is pushing the stuff down deeper. You need to scoop it up. So what I do is, after that massage, that thorough massage, then step back for a second. What's the dog's first response? What is it going to want to do? It's going to want to shake his head. In fact, to help it along, what I do is I lift the ear up and I give a quick blow right into the ear canal. Dogs hate that. And their natural reaction is going to be to shake their head. That's what you want. Don't wear your Sunday best when you're doing this because you're going to get wet and with a lot of ear schmutz at the same time. So you want to sit back, stand back, blow in the ear, let them shake their head. A lot of the stuff will come out, and then do it again, another rinse. Don't start cleaning with your finger, your cotton swab, your gauze, your cotton, until they've done this like at least twice. Then the way to properly use a cotton swab without hurting anything, depending on the size of the dog. If it's a little dog, you want to hold with your thumb and index finger about maybe a half an inch away from the tip. That way, when you put it down the ear, these two fingers are going to stop you from going any deeper. It'll be very safe. For a big dog, you can be like an inch and a half away from the tip. For a middle dog, medium-sized dog, an inch away from the tip. You just speak to your veterinarians or one of your veterinary nurses, technicians, and they can help you along just to know how deep the canal is anatomically and therefore how much swab you need to put in. The goal is to put it in and then always wipe out. Okay, you put it in and wipe up. Don't stick it in and on the edge of the ear. Try to stick it without touching the walls and then scoop out. When you get to the point where your cleaning solution is coming out pretty clean, you're not getting anything on your cotton swab, then you know it's fine to now put in the medication that was prescribed by your veterinarian. It's going to most likely have an antibacterial product, an anti-inflammatory product, an anti-yeast product. There are many of them out there, many good ones. Speak to your vet, but you need to do something. And I recommend medications, unless it's something they put in, which is knows to last 7 to 10 days. Yeah, usually is good for you. Do it once a day, even though instructions by the manufacturers twice a day. Unnecessary to do it twice a day. Once a day is all you need, and then usually for a course of at least 7 days. And then again, have the ears rechecked with your veterinarian. So I hope that answers your question, Red Apple. If you have any more questions, get a hold of me. All right, I'm sure. So what is, I love to hear you now. Yes, I love to hear you now too. What was that? No, I'm just joking. Okay. Hello. LA Pet Care. Hello. By the way, LA Pet Care is the greatest facility. I my family using it. My clients use it. They love it. It's a house with a huge yard, a lot of dogs at play. It's great. So you can check them out. If you're in LA, LA Pet Care is great. Now, LA Pet Care sent a live video. Let me know if that's real, because a lot of people hit that button accidentally and then they didn't really want. How do you know if your dog is drinking enough water? Well, a couple of things to do when you want to drink enough water. First of all, stick a finger in their gums. And if the gums are slimy, that's usually pretty good. Another great way to tell if they're dehydrated is you go by the nape of the neck, kind of like where you pick a puppy up or mom picks her kittens up. You tent up, you grab with a pinch, right? Bring it up and let go. If the hair drops back so fast you can barely see where you lift it up, that's fine. Dogs that are dehydrated, if you tent up and you let go, you'll still see the tent up there. That dog is often dehydrated. So if that's the case, don't go by the nose. The nose, it is true that dogs that are very dehydrated will have a dry nose, but a dry nose doesn't also mean they're dehydrated. It doesn't work both ways. There are a lot of dogs running around that are totally fine hydration-wise that might have a dry nose. One of my kids has a very crazy golden retriever, and I have big dogs and I have lots, and they don't all get along. However, their Frenchie gets along great with the rest of my dogs. So when they go out of town, they bring the Frenchie to me and they take Wheezy to LA Pet Care. So no, it's great. And they love it. They have a blast. So one of the things I wanted to talk about, and we just want to make sure we have no more questions here, is this. Speaking of ears, I like to share experiences with you, maybe to enhance your knowledge, expectations, because you know, I think success in veterinary practice is all about expectations. And that is, if you're expecting a certain result and you don't get it, then you're upset, you're disappointed, and I don't blame you. But if you really know all the facts and you know what to get upset or not about, then it'll be better for you. So here's something called an ear hematoma. By show of hands, how many are familiar with ear hematomas? Ear hematomas are blood blisters. It can happen in any kind of dog. I see it more often in the floppy ear dogs, but it can be in erect dogs' ears as well. We don't always know why it happens. It's usually because of secondary to excessive head shaking, excessive scratching, maybe some ear infection, where the dog itself will scratch the ear vigorously and pop a blood vessel inside the pinna. The pinna is the ear flap. Or in dogs that shake their heads vigorously, that flopping ear back and forth might hit the edge of a table or something, and that can pop the blood vessel. And so the pinna, the ear flap, fills up with blood. It's basically a blood blister. It's called a hematoma. And of course, when it happens, the owners come in and they want us to drain the hematoma. Of course, we always try it. Guess what? 99% of the time, it's coming back. And 50% of those times, it's coming back with a vengeance. In other words, the hematoma could have been this big. You drain it, and then 2-3 days later, sometimes a day later, it's back again. And now it's this big, the whole flap. So what is it? Why is it? Why is it coming back? So there's a bleeder inside that ear, or often more than one. We can't. There's no way to stop that bleeder, right? And so what you do is, if we drain it, all we're doing is we haven't touched the bleeder. So it's still bleeding. It's going to fill up again. Even if you open the ear and looked for the bleeder, you'll never find the one feeding it. Why? Just by cutting the ear, you're going to have a lot of new bleeders. You're not going to know what to do. So the way to fix it, there are many different techniques. Some will take a little cut on the top of the hematoma, stick in a tube, and that way it'll continue to drain. I never had success with that. There's ones that you can have like these staples that go through into the ear. That makes logical sense. Or little buttons, that makes logical sense. But my good old-fashioned way is much faster. What we need to do, since we can never find the bleeder, we can never find the actual vessels that are filling up, that are continuing to bleed and filling up this hematoma, what we do is, if we can remove all the dead space, that means the empty space, then there's no place for the blood to go. So the way we do it is, we make an incision along the length of the hematoma. We want a scar. So we now sew what we call mattress sutures. These are sutures that go through and through from the front of the ear to the back of the ear. And then when you tie them, it tightens the front to the back, super tight. So even though we haven't looked for or successfully tied off that bleeder, because you never find it, what we've done is eliminate all the space, so there's no place for the blood to go, and ultimately it'll heal flat. Now, dogs with erect ears, again, expectation, I let owners know that ear may still not stand up all the way. The scarring itself might be a little heavy. Sometimes the very tip will fold over. So cosmetically, you might notice a difference even after successful surgery. For floppy ear dogs, makes no difference. It's going to heal just beautifully. Now, here's the most important part. What do you do if you say, you know what? Nah, my dog's old. I'm not going to fix it. Or I don't want to put it through surgery. We'll just drain. If it comes back, what happens? Ah, this is the hard part. If it comes back, it can lead to disaster. And because I know I have you all at the edges of your chair waiting, and we have to take a break. So Mark is giving me the dirty looks. So we're going to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the very bad news if you do nothing. A lot of times doing nothing is not so bad. But in this case, in hematomas, it could be really disastrous. When we come back, we'll talk about it. Don't go away.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. there is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Hey, we're back here live on Pet Life Radio. We're just talking about a question came in on Instagram. A new study came out that dogs who do not bark are more prone to depression. What do I think? So we're just talking about how, I haven't seen the study, so I can't really comment. Obviously, hopefully the study is going to give some reasons why. But the only thing I can think of is when it comes to, for example, puppy chewing, we teach people don't get mad at them for chewing. We want to redirect that behavior to something more appropriate to chew on, but don't get mad at them and stop them from chewing. Chewing is normal, natural, and an essential behavior, not just for their oral development, for the puppy teeth to, you know, come out, the adult teeth to come in, but also for their mental development. So apparently, I can see this being the same thing. If you suppress the barking, now, if a dog is not barking, okay, for real, because they just don't bark, a Basenji, for example, some dogs just don't bark. Wheezy, my son's, he's not a big barker. But if you try to stop a dog from barking by too much shock collars, or one that hits immediately and doesn't let them, you know, sometimes even after a third or fourth bark, then I can understand a certain degree of frustration, because that's what they do. They're protecting you, and you're going to stop them? You're going to get mad at them for protecting you and for barking and letting you be aware that there might be a problem or an intruder? I could see that. I could see that causing some issues. What causes cherry eye? So the gland of the third eyelid, called the gland of the nictitans. The nictitans is that third eyelid. If you gently press on a dog's eye, you will see from the inside corner a little pink membrane coming up above the eye. That is the nictitans. That is the third eyelid. Now, there's a gland in there, and that gland is very much like tonsillar tissue. It's very reactive. And when that gland can basically react, it gets very large. If it gets too large, it will erupt. It'll pop out of the backside of that nictitans, that third eyelid gland, that third eyelid, and it pops out, and now it's visible. You can see it. And we call it's basically a prolapsed gland of the third eyelid, aka cherry eye. It can respond. Cherry eyes are not quite like hematomas, because some of them can respond to medicine. I always say, let's stay in the eye. Let's make sure that the eye is, the cornea is intact. And then if the cornea is intact, we can use some medication that has steroid and give it a few days, a week, and let's see if we can bring that gland down. Often it's successful. In some dogs, once it comes up, it stays up. And then it depends on aesthetics and functionality. Aesthetically, it looks ugly, but you can get used to it. So if it's a small cherry eye, and when the dog blinks, the tears are still always incorporated around that small gland, then the only reason to fix it is cosmetic. It is functional. So we don't want to remove it. And the reason is that as dogs get older, their normal tear glands start to dry up a little bit. One of the functions of that third eyelid gland is to provide additional tears, accessory tears. Well, if you remove the gland and they get older, then we worry about something called KCS, keratoconjunctivitis cica, or dry eye. If that gland was there and functioning, it would provide the necessary additional tears. So we used to remove them. They look ugly. Now, if they're really big and they are not covered in tears, and when the dog blinks, it doesn't blink and incorporate that gland within the closed eyelids, then we have a problem. Then we get these glands dry out. They can get infected. They become afunctional. They stop being functional. You got to do something. So recommendations are, I always try to treat them conservatively first. I stay in the eye. If the eye is good, we use an ophthalmic ointment with corticosteroid. If we can shrink it down, great. It may come back, but if not, then, and it doesn't respond to the medication, then we need to now new surgeries are called tucking the gland of the third eyelid. There are a number of different techniques. I've been through three of them. I found which one I like the best, and that's the one I use. And we open up a little slice on the bulbar surface of the third eyelid. We stuff the gland down in that slice, and then we sew up the slice on the inside. So the gland is still there. It's still functioning, but it's out of sight. You do not want to let them dry out. And if you don't mind, if they're very small, and sometimes I've seen really small ones that have been there for years, but they're nice and moist, they're nice and pink, doesn't bother the owner. Now, let's take that same theory of not bothering the owner, what's nice, what is okay. If you do nothing, it still stays okay. And now let's go back to our hematoma. And the hematoma, if you leave it alone, let me tell you what happens. In several days, so it's going to finally stop filling. It's either going to clot, the body's own fibrin, it's going to do its job, or the pressure, back pressure, because now the hematoma is so big, there's blood pressure oozing out, but there's back pressure putting it back because now it's so big, it'll finally clot. So now you have a hematoma that reached its peak. What do you do? So if you do nothing, here's what's going to happen. I'll predict it for you. Number one, the blood cells, like all blood cells, are going to die. 5 days, 7 days, whatever it is, they're going to die. Like a seroma, the serum part, what's left after the cells die, that's going to get resorbed. Just like in a seroma, we do a surgery, and the surgery, there's some dead space, it fills up with serum, and then ultimately the serum gets resorbed, and it's going to be fine. But with a hematoma, there's one aspect, one part that is not going to disappear. It's going to stay, and that is the fibrin. Fibrin is a meshwork of clotting. So what's going to happen is you are going to get one heck of a clot, and most importantly, an unpredictable clot. Now, you see what I'm wearing here? You see wrestlers wear these now, ear covers. Why? Because they get that wrestler's ear, and you get these scarring, cauliflower type ear. You've heard it. You've seen wrestlers, older wrestlers that have them. They got the ugliest ears. And that's because of all the pulling and the cracking, and the ears got scarred. And in a hematoma, we can't predict how and where the scarring from that additional remnant of fibrin is going to happen. And I've seen some really gnarly ears. Now, if that fibrin causes a hard clot that blocks the opening of the ear canal, now we have problems. Houston, there's a problem, because then we get persistent ear infections. It is a disaster waiting to happen, not to mention how ugly it is. So of all the things I recommend, you want to try first, drain it, absolutely give it a shot. You got a 1, maybe 2% chance of it not coming back. Surgery, the way to go. But to do nothing, you're only waiting for disaster. So I would highly advise not to do nothing. So if your ear fills up, see your veterinarian. If you have any, you know, questions about it, you can always reach out to me, but you do not want to ignore it. All right, now let's see. I have the happiest dog because he barks a lot. There we go. And again, don't yell at your dog for barking. Now, if you have a dog, some dogs just like to bark. And if you have a dog that likes to bark a lot and you look outside, there is nothing out there. You've checked the phone wires in the back. Maybe there was a squirrel. Maybe there's a bird on the roof. Of course, they saw something. But then you can, you know, clap your hands. Got it. You know, if you have one of those sound machines, if you have a bark collar, that is not the electric shock one. I do not like those in the hands of a novice. I don't really love them at all, but certainly not in the hands of a novice. But the citronella collars, I hear good things about, and they could work. Is there a way to cure a heart murmur? Well, it all depends. How specific do you want to get? Heart murmur happens because of a faulty valve. There are effects that happen because of that faulty valve, and because the blood now is not all flowing out from the ventricular contraction into the pulmonary artery or the aorta, but instead, it's backing up into the portion of the heart, all right? The chamber from which it just came from, which is the atrium or auricle, as they call it, the atrium. So then it backs up from there. In left heart failure, the backup affects the lungs. In right heart failure, the backup affects the belly, and you get fluid buildup either in the lungs, congestive heart failure, or in the abdomen called ascites, all because of a bad heart. Medications are often given, administered to help the effects of that backflow. to make it less by opening up the vessels, making them more the stretching, increasing the strength of the heartbeat, all these things. But actually, is it fixing the valve itself? No. However, there's always an exception. There is a veterinarian in Japan who actually pioneered the first heart valve surgery. I've had two patients that have been flew their pets to Japan for the surgery, successful. And now he, the Japanese veterinarian, has been coming to the States and working with some veterinarians at the veterinary schools and through the American College of Surgery and Cardiology. And he is teaching the technique to our specialists. So in the future, hopefully, we will have more and more veterinarians here in the States that will be trained in this surgery, in this procedure. And then we can do something to actually fix the valve, which then hopefully should fix the murmur. All right. So if there are any other things, questions you have, you can always reach me during the week. I'm heading to this week. I'm leaving on Tuesday evening to Super Zoo in Las Vegas, Nevada. It is arguably one of the two largest pet industry conferences in the country. It's usually every July or August. This year, it's in August. I am going to be doing Fox 5 on Wednesday morning, a segment on innovation and technology. And it's going to be really, really cool. And basically, I found products that are really cool. We're going to talk about them on the show. And then maybe what I'll do is next week, I will share with you the products, because I think I'm going to still have them. And we'll talk about how cool they are, what they're for. Now, some aren't also, a lot of the technological electronic products are great, but they're expensive. There are a couple of products that I found that I just thought were so cool and so simple. It's like, I think of that simple. And they really solve a problem. They solve a niche. And I think it's great to have as well. I'll be seeing my friend Allison Spellman. She's also big time on Instagram at Allison Spellman, who's working on a new rescue show, which I'm trying to be a part of. So a lot of things going on. I know I'm going to be very, very busy. You know, I walk these shows and everybody wants a piece because they see me and they want to know, I do a show like this. They want me to talk about the product. They want me to help them. I'm going to be working with Dog TV. I'm doing my segment on Dog TV also, and that will be rebroadcast. So a lot of stuff going on. So Super Zoo 2024, and I'm looking forward to it. And Las Vegas, well, I'm not a real gambler, so I don't get such a thrill of that. But I love being in Fox 5. My good friends are there, and Jason Feinberg, who's great. It'll be fun. And every time I go to Vegas, I try to get on the show. Jason is a big cat guy. One of the products I have is really cool for cats. So anyway, we'll see you next week. Save that time, save that channel. And if you have any questions during the week, reach me, Dr. Jeff, at PetLifeRadio.com, or here on Instagram. Just send me the question, and we will talk about it on my next show next week. See you, everybody. Have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.